Chuck, Chuck, I got
keep my headphones. No,
you I'm got, left and right.
You left and right? Wall to wall, treetop tall. Let's try these. Hello? Oh, there we go. Well, maybe. A little bit. Okay.
Are you headphone deaf now? Is that what it is?
I think I'm headphone deaf now.
What? Oh, are we going to do this?
I don't know. It's up to you, Grandma.
Where's the doc?
Did you see her walking around?
Yeah, she's all poor thing. She's all...
is, but if I... But if I don't... If I don't keep going, if I stop, I'll die. So I can't rest. That would
you won't die.
That's right.
Yeah, I will.
No, you won't.
I know. But I have so much guilt if I don't, if I stop doing, if I don't.
Let's see. What is it? If you have guilt, you're worried about the past. If you're anxious,
you're worried about the future.
If you're at peace, you're in the now.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Where'd you read that?
Buddha. Me and a guy by the name of Buddha.
Buddha. What was his first name?
Billy.
Okay. I'm just curious.
No, Siddhartha.
Yeah, Siddhartha.
Do you know what?
Our guests will know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What? What were you going to say?
Do you say Proust or Proust?
Proust.
Proust?
It's Proust.
Do you know what his first name was?
Marcel.
I know, but every time I read it in that Markle? Book that I'm reading.
Markle?
No, I think of Marcel because that was the monkey on Friends.
And there's everything you need to know. I mean, hi, I'm Chick McGee, and we're off the air.
Let's do this.
Well, tomorrow in the morning in the back of the Beamer. Now, mama, what's up? I know that you're a steamer, but you can't be frontin' when it comes to this.
Put down your back, you know, since
you can't.
Since the Bob Steiner episode, he hasn't played him.
No, he hasn't.
He's playing other stuff.
This is Bob.
I know now.
It's been a few. So fast. Up in the mud house, gonna be in the club. I only know about two or three words in this, but I love it. Welcome back to the Off the Air podcast. I am your host and leader, Chick McGee.
Well, you're our leader.
That's
you're not the leader of people out there.
Oh, the leader, I guess, is what it is.
Well, of us.
Yeah.
And the chickmunks.
You don't like the chickmunk. The term chickmunk.
I don't. But
what do you want? What do you want to call?
That's the co-host, Jess. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
She's suffering from back pain.
OTAers.
And that's Mr. Jason of Beverly Hills.
Don't we have t-shirts?
Mm-hmm. T-shirts are out there.
T-shirts are
out there and ready. And go
Get
to the
em.
Website, chaggy.com.
Mm-hmm. I designed the girls' t-shirt, just so everybody knows.
You guys designed them all. I stepped back.
No, PJ designed them.
No, but when we went to
you
pick them out and colors and everything, it was you and I, mm-hmm. Jess.
I was out.
And Chick was off in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Like looking at business cards. And mm-hmm.
I think a wise person once told me, it makes me happy to see you guys happy.
I hate you.
No, you don't.
No.
Our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, one of our favorites and one of our most popular. He is back. The master of disaster, the host of with the most. Dr. Will Miller is here. Hi,
Doc. I must take issue to a
three-timer.
Something.
What?
No,
issue
four
with
timer.
You said
four
that you
timer.
Don't, you said that you're not a leader.
Uh-huh.
You are a leader because Chick Nation has thousands of people, and if they are following, the presumption is you are leading.
Okay. I'm really uncomfortable with that notion, but you know that.
But that's why you're a good leader, because there's humility. Oftentimes, leadership is accompanied by flamboyant narcissism and malevolence, and you don't have any of that.
Nietzsche said the best writers will be those who don't think they can write.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So the best leaders are the ones who...
Humility.
Oh, love humility.
It goes a long way, doesn't it?
Watch this. Watch what I do with this comedy-wise.
Go.
I'm the best at humility.
Well, it's an ebb and flow. It's an ebb and flow.
Yeah?
Yeah. In other words, you can feel up 1 minute and then you're humbled. And if you, you know, but you have followers, you have a nation.
I got to tell you, I don't know if we have anything. We sort of have something planned, but I just want to tell you.
Go.
Me, and I know that we've talked about me quite a lot, but it's my podcast.
Well,
as Mark Maron would say.
That's why I wouldn't want to hear.
But as far as my mental outlook and well-being and comfortableness with me and almost being proud of myself at times, I am in uncharted territory as far as my lows are okay. That's and my highs are, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, they're not wildly, everything's not the best in the world or the worst in the world. And
so you're self-medicating in a positive way.
I'm not self-medicating.
No, in a positive way.
Oh, in a positive way.
You're doing that because if you were medicated, in my experience with antidepressants, you would react the same way if your house was on fire as if you won the lottery.
Exactly. It sucks everything out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
There's a term in therapy called lability, which means sort of a range. In other words, there's a mood range, and you want your lows to be too low. And what keeps your lows buoyant usually are outside support sources that help you raise it up.
Right.
And then to allow your highs to be pretty good peaks.
And the one thing I think quite often is a tip Jess gave me at one point. She said, why wouldn't you feel this right now? It's okay.
Yeah,
if
he was upset, then I said, you're supposed to be upset. You're supposed to feel this. Go with it until it's over.
Yep.
And that, in my lowest lows now, that really okay, I need, this is what we're doing now.
It's rational. It's appropriate.
Right. But I will tell you this, and I'm sure my mom wasn't different from any other mother. She would do everything she could to stop me from crying over something.
Interesting.
She would go, what are you crying about? What are you crying about? Stop it.
And we realized this. My dad would say, is this worth crying about?
Yeah.
And not in a mean way, but in a question way. Like, think about this for a second. Is this worth crying about?
Yeah.
And to this day, I still ask myself that when I get upset.
My mother was very uncomfortable with displays of anger, and she would repress anger in the kids. You were not allowed to get angry, which made it worse because it wound up like being repressed and then leaking out in inappropriate ways. And so a lot of parents do that. They feel uncomfortable within themselves with an emotion of their kid, and they try and manage their kids' moods when it's really managing your own mood.
Exactly. And I guess the mentally healthiest of the three of us would be Jason. At least that's the impression I have. I mean, you never seem to be really upset about anything.
I feel like I spent a lot of time with Jason over the course of 4 or 5 years, and it's always very logical when he does get angry. You know what I mean? It was but when he was angry enough. Like, if he cursed, I was like, okay, everybody hit the deck.
What's your go-to when you're the maddest man?
I don't know. It happens so
infrequently. No, it's not. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was never, it was just like...
See, him saying that, Dr. Will, pisses me off.
But see, I have the mentality of like, if I'm going to get pissed, which is rare, you know, it's got to be something worthwhile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I'm going to drop, a curse word, it's going to mean something if I say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
What are you saying? What the fuck are you saying? Willy-nilly?
I don't use them very well, honestly. Right. I'm not real good at...
Well, you don't have any need, it seems, to project anger.
No.
In other words, the anger is about what the anger is about, and it's just there. It doesn't touch on something that lifts you off to something else.
Yeah.
Somebody else's actions.
That's the shorthand. Well, I'm mad because of this and this and this.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And the next thing you know, you're not
it's
fighting
dominoes.
About.
It's dominoes. Exactly
I'm not
right.
fighting with that person. The person in the room is not who I'm fighting with. And
in therapy, for example, you know, someone is sharing with sincerity an issue with... say, take a parent, a mother or father. Well, if in fact I'm not careful as a therapist and the themes or the description they're giving me of that parent is reminiscent of my own, I have to be very careful that I don't overreact colluding with them against their parent. And so, for example, my father was a kind of a World War II guy and very withdrawn, you know what I mean? Because he probably had post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure.
And so when someone is talking about their remote disconnected father, I have to be very careful that I stick with them and not go
and
to
not
my
go to
own
yours.
Stuff.
So he was kind of a Gary Cooper, strong,
he was just,
silent.
Oh, and
just,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he was real blue collar. You know, my brother and we all went to school and, you know, I was his worst nightmare because I was so verbal and he was so nonverbal.
Oh, okay.
And so, I mean, he was a great dad and very loyal. But I remember we used to laugh at him because he was so Brooklyn blue collar. When he was like 70, he said to my two brothers and I, "You boys are really lucky. I got a really great prostrate." So he used to make fun of him. But anyway, so yeah, and then my mother was very voluble and out there and very theatrical. And so once again, as a therapist, I have to be careful because all of us are vulnerable. When you see somebody like that, who am I looking at? It's a mask. Who am I looking at? And what makes you launch?
Well, I have three kids all over the age of 20. And Jess has two under the age of 10 and under. Mm-hmm. And Jason, 15 and...
No, 12.
12 and under.
12-year-old daughter. The 9-year-old, almost 10, is fine. But the 12-year-old, this is the biggest challenge of my life right now.
So what what do you do?
My advice to parents, because I get this a lot, you know, in shrink land, at the elementary level, they still have a pretty stable, robust support system with family and school. It obviously gets really dicey when you start getting into, puberty and mm-hmm. junior and senior high school. My advice overall is pay attention to mostly the peer group. Mm-hmm. Who they are mm-hmm. with, yep. surrounding them with a peer group that is stable, where you know the parents.
Right.
It's like, no, you don't have permission to be with this family of assholes. Mm-hmm. You're just, there's a line in the sand.
Right.
You can't go there. And I'm sorry, mm-hmm. if we have to move to Connecticut, we'll do it.
Yeah, we were just talking about this in the hall. I substitute, and that's the main reason that I substitute, because I want to know.
Good for you.
I only sub in the grades that my kids are in.
That's right.
And I want to know. I want to know right. who they're hanging out with, and I know the parents, and that's why I'm on PTO right. and do all those things.
Honey, I love you, but you know what? The McGillicuddy family, I know they're insane. You can't be friends with
them.
Oh,
well, that's the hardest part, too, is people that I went to high school with, and now we're parenting together, and I was like, oh, no.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I've heard, now, help me with this, because you don't react to your children's problems. You try not to react. You try to parent. Am I getting that right?
Well, yeah. You know, the way I've heard it said was Maya Angelou said, she says, the greatest piece of advice I got was to resist the temptation to fall in love with your children. You parent them and you love them, but you don't fall in love with them because,
yeah.
you know, you lose your capacity to keep distant.
Right.
You know, listen to this. It's history, but I think you'll find it interesting, because I get asked this all the time about, you know, sexual activity, you know, the hookup culture, et cetera. Listen to this. 100 years ago, the average boy or girl in America went into physical puberty at like 13 or 14.
Right.
They got married
right.
at 16, which right. means they were surrounded by family and mm-hmm. they only had to remain sort of chaste and distant for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were off into a life of commitment, and those marriages
right.
lasted.
Right.
Today, they go into puberty at what, 11, 12? Mm-hmm. They get married at 27. So
right.
for the 15 or 16 years that their bodies are telling them that we are most capable
yeah.
to be sexually engaged,
mm-hmm.
we flood them with eroticism.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in fact, we kind of go blah, blah, blah with our fingers in our ears about, no, you really should only be in a committed relationship. Are we psychotic? I mean, that's just, we're unfair to mm-hmm. our adolescent and post-adolescent children
mm-hmm.
and generation, because we don't give them opportunities to think about. You know, when I used to be on Nick at Night and I was analyzing TV shows, one of them that I would do like in, you know, Seinfeld or Friends. Friends is an interesting period piece because it, for the first time, described in vivid depiction friendship. It's like, when are you my lover?
Mm-hmm.
When are you my buddy? When are you my sister? When are we sexual? When, you know what I mean? It's like there's
right.
the lines are all blurred, and that continues today in the hookup culture.
Mm-hmm.
Kids in college today are actually having the same or a little less sex than they were 20 years ago, which is surprising to people.
Really?
But it's more casual, the hookups.
Okay.
In other words, it's a friends with benefits type
thing. It's not that
right.
big a deal.
No, it's not that big
happens.
A deal. No, it's
okay.
not that big a kind of a stepping over the border. But again, they don't get married till they're 27 or 28 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So strap in.
Right.
But paying attention to the peer culture.
Yeah, which we're very aware of that. And
militant.
Do that. But the thing that's tough and is, you know, I love my daughter. She's a great kid. But one moment she's a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a flat-out jerk, and then 2 hours later, she's the best kid ever.
Well, you know, that's why...
That's hard for me, Mr. Rational, to
right.
understand. Why are you being this
that
way?
That was the best thing about Louis C.K. One of his first famous stand-up bits was when his daughter was like 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She goes, she's an asshole.
Yeah.
She's an absolute... I mean...
She wakes me up, she eats my food, she makes messes,
She purposely spills stuff. I mean, that. Mm-hmm. What would you call that? That's an asshole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, obviously, it's a funny kind of way to look
yeah,
at it, but
yeah.
it's a good way
it's
to deal with it.
It's being truthful about
because
it, absolutely.
Because you guys are, obviously I'm older, so it's never too late to go back and connect. I just had this discussion with my oldest daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The things that have happened in my life in the past year, it really has, I wanted to say reconnected, but that's not true. I've connected with
connected.
Both my daughters especially, and with my son as closely as a father and son.
How awesome
can connect.
Is that?
Yeah,
it's a fundamental premise in therapy, because couples will come in and they really, and with sincerity, really want to change the other person. I'm saying, I know this sounds cliche, you may want to poke me in the eye, but you change yourself and the other person starts reacting to the new self, and
mm-hmm.
that changes them.
Right.
I had a client one time who grew up in a really, just really terrible family, and everyone in the family, all 7 kids, except for one, became addicted. And the one who didn't become addicted was like the parentified child and was heroic and wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the family came to me because, of all things, she got a brain tumor. It's like, oh my God. And of course, they were enraged, like, of all people to get sick.
Right.
Well, I wound up getting involved with them, and it turns out the brain tumor was benign, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But it got one person to get sober and to kind of change his life. And he kept saying to me, how can I convince my brothers and sisters? And I said, they will see it happen. And son of a gun, within 3 or 4 or 5 years, the others came to it. People respond to you where you are. And if you change, they change.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just frightening me to see them and remember how I used to be and distant and awful. And when they were, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I was unavailable because I was constantly in a bad mood and angry about where life had put me and on and on and on. And it's funny how they've changed, but they haven't, maybe, I don't think they've really changed at all. You know what I mean? But I think
it's different for your oldest because she is a parent too. And she there's things you don't understand.
That is just spot on.
You don't understand it's until you are a parent.
Absolutely. Right. That's the ticket, because the fact of the matter is the word of wisdom to the young adult children, 20 and 20, it's like, get over yourself. Mm-hmm. If we have to not fall in love with you, you got to learn to forgive your parents.
Absolutely.
And until you forgive your parents, you'll be a mess. And as soon as you forgive your parents, to say, oh my God, what they went through, that's why that happened. There's a reason and a rationale why my father was distant, my mother was eruptive, blah, blah, blah. You have to get over that.
I'm 32 and my brother's 29. And then I have a sister that's 20 and a sister that's 17. So to watch them go through, we all have different relationships with our parents, but for them to get to the point where I am, and they said, you were angry with mom forever. You were angry with dad forever. You were angry. And I said, I was, but I want you to not do what I did.
Yeah.
Let it go now.
There's not a person listening to this. The thousands of people listening to this wonderful podcast who can't relate to this. Now, where are you in the family, Jason? Were you young or old?
I'm the oldest of two.
Oldest of two.
My sister is 4 years younger.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And what is that relationship like?
Your sister's more free-spirited than you, would you say?
She's fine. You know, she just had her 36th birthday. You know, she's a grown adult.
I forget how old you are.
Yeah, I'm old.
He just
What is that,
40.
Dr. Will? No, but people, you meet them, the age that you meet them, that's this...
It's kind of
That's
frozen
the age
there.
They stay.
Uh-huh. Until there's very evident physical deterioration.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like to me, Jason is Jess's age. I don't know why,
No, Chick and I met, I was probably 22.
I was going to say, you were in college.
I was 22. I was just out of college.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's when I met you, and I was an intern here. I was 21. Yeah.
Isn't that great? Long-term relationships. So, of course, you know, I wrote Refrigerator Rights, and Refrigerator Rights are relationships where if they come into your house, these people can go into your fridge without asking. It's an intimacy. That's what you create. Yeah. I don't know
if I could do that at your house. Do you think I could walk into your house and open your fridge?
Well, you've never been to my house
But
you two can do it at my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could probably, I would be over.
Are you doing the pop-in tonight? Are you doing the gush shot?
I got to move a...
Son of a...
I got to move a thing.
No, I do.
I got a thing with the thing.
Yeah.
No, but
I know, I do.
But let's suppose Jason and Jess, suppose you live next to each other.
Right.
And you saw each other routinely and regularly. Well, after a while, after you went to this wedding and that funeral and this event or whatever, eventually, you're in the house.
Yeah.
And that's what people do. People today don't have that because of moving and media. Because of moving. Mm-hmm. 45 million Americans moved last year. Every single year for 6 decades. Some, you know, recession years, it goes down to like in the 35, 40, every single year.
I can't even imagine how many and now places we watch, I've lived.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you really? Really?
I think I've probably lived 15 places in Indianapolis, right?
Well, okay, speaking
of
15.
Since 86.
This October will be 15 years in the same house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as your kids get older, your house shrinks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And for years, we've been itching to do, but you know what? We don't want to because we have we have plenty of them, but we have two great neighbors.
That makes such a difference.
Mm-hmm. And it really, it's like, that's you incredible. Know what? We're fine
that's
here.
That's right. Absolutely.
I'm fortunate.
That's a choice that-
I have great neighbors as long as I don't go outside.
That's not true.
Them. Incredible. It's incredible neighbors.
I had a neighbor who just moved last week and he walked over and said, hey, we got our new house. And you know, and I was like, oh, because they were really nice, him and his wife, they were great. And they said, so this is probably the last time we're going to see you. And I said, okay, you know, and I was in my car. And so I was pulling away. I was like, good luck with everything. And he's like, hey, I've listened to 7 podcasts in the last 2 days. Keep up the good work.
And
I didn't even know. I had no idea that he listened. I had no idea that he listened. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's cool.
Yep. Well, you know, the way our bodies are designed is we have an impulse to gratify the self. You know, just the energy coming in, what's going to make me feel good, even when it's admirable. But in fact, the way that we're designed is to be engaged and connected. When the energy goes out, that's when our body is functioning most mm-hmm. optimally. Mm-hmm. You know, and so those are relationships, you know.
Well, and that kind of leads a little bit into, we had this great discussion a couple podcasts ago with Dave Landau,
yeah, okay.
And mm-hmm. we were just talking about kids today and just the technology and this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in 10 years, these kids are going to be
desensitized.
Desensitized, yeah. but not able to handle.
Isn't what he's saying every generation has said yes. this? Coming yes. up, yes. children, the declining
that was my
morality
second point.
Of our youth.
Chick makes a great point. Yeah. This happens every generation.
And let me share something that's encouraging. One of the advantages I have is being at a big research university.
And
because
you're
kind of
wonderful.
Smart. Well, you're very smart, got a big IQ. Yeah.
But you wind up, you know, having access to some of the latest trends. And one of the cool trends in sociology now that's really interesting is this next generation, actually under 30 mm-hmm. and coming out, mm-hmm. have a very little desire for suburban life.
Right.
They either want rural in some small cases because mm-hmm. they really want to be out there
oh,
and something
love to
agriculture.
Live on a farm
exactly
with
right.
Yep, it's one yep. extreme or the other, right?
That's
now.
Right. Or they yeah. want the city. But
or the
interestingly,
downtown loft. Yeah.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
But in other words, they're less inclined toward Boston, Chicago, New York, or LA, and they're more toward like smaller cities where they can live downtown because all of the cities, there's not a city under 100,000 in this country that isn't frantically trying to remake the downtown mm-hmm. with amenities. You need coffee shops. You need,
yeah.
absolutely. And so it's quality of life.
I'm from Columbus, Ohio, but I consider Indianapolis my hometown. Mm-hmm. And Columbus, Ohio is so jealous of Indianapolis,
sure.
they can't stand
That's
it.
That's not true.
It's true. Indianapolis has a thriving downtown.
That's right.
Quality of life. NFL team,
how long
NBA
did we
team.
Not? How long
oh, sure.
did we not have
sure.
a thriving
downtown?
Sure.
I mean, downtown? It's leaps and bounds since I got here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible.
But when you're talking about the quality of life and the need to connection, what you're talking about, Jason, is how disengaged we are, how mm-hmm. remote and mediated we are with Facebook and Twitter, et cetera. But the fact of the matter is younger people are choosing a quality of life. Here's a really interesting situation. I speak at corporations and have been for a long time. You hear a repeating lament by corporate hirers, HR people, that are exasperated with this pain in the ass younger generation that's coming in because they're entitled, they don't want to work, they don't yeah. want delayed gratification. Okay, mm-hmm. well, that's one negative spin. When you talk to the people on the other end of the equation, they say, I'm not really interested in the life you have designed for me. I'm interested in a quality of life that doesn't sell my soul to your corporation. I don't want to work for you for 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm happy to be in the mission and to do well, but you know what? I'm going to leave as soon as this sucks. And they're into quality of life. Well, that's two very different stories, one demonizing the other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's kind of the challenge, but it will right itself. You know, if you think about some of the hot button political issues, the kids in high school and college now have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Mm-mm.
They don't care about it. They don't give a shit about it. It's amazing.
I heard a great conversation with Simon Pegg, the guy who did Shaun of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
and he's English, and not that it has anything to do with anything, but he brought up a great point, and he brought up a great word that I hope I get right, but I want to use it a lot, the infantilization.
Yes, infantilizing people, that's right.
Of our entire culture right
that's
now.
Right.
When you think about the Beatles put out what they put out, Jimi Hendrix put out what they put out in like 6 or 7 years, and the Beatles were done when they were all 27, 28 years old.
That's right.
Beatles were over.
Really?
Jimi Hendrix was dead by the time 27. He was 27.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've got, I wear football t-shirts to work. I wear nothing but comfortable shoes and shorts and, mm-hmm. and sneakers, and I have these little figurines on my my workstation. It's just, can you imagine, my dad looked older than I do, and I'm 12 years older than he ever got to be. It's just...
Yeah. I was working with a comedian. And
it's amazing.
We were working in Rehoboth Beach, Maryland. And I don't even know where the hell it is. So we're driving along down there to do this gig for the weekend. And we're driving on this country road on the way to the beach club where we were going to work. All of a sudden, we hear this tremendous roar. It sounded like an earthquake. We stop the car, get out. We happen to stop right under the landing approach of an Air Force base. And a B-52 came over. It must have been like 50 feet over our head. So what did we do as mature people?
Sure.
Well, we stayed there for 3 hours and watched the
B-52s land.
And
he,
we were
yeah.
there with our arms folded, and he yeah. goes, you know what? If my dad could see me now, he'd slap my face.
Mm-hmm.
This
I mean,
is how I make my living.
It yeah. seems like yeah. every generation was so much more mature than even my generation.
Yep.
I can't imagine, because you're, you know, can you imagine your dad you know, well, I mean, he is, I mean, he wears football shirts and he had somewhat of a, not a childish, but.
No, but my dad is, my dad was the guy.
Your grandfather, think how mature your grandfather seemed.
That's not where I'd go with
all
that.
Of.
I think, my dad, I'm going to say my dad. Okay. My dad, he was, you know, my brother and I did a lot of stuff on our own because my dad was working 80 hours a week. You know, my dad was as a pipe fitter by trade. And he.
When did he start his job? How old was he when he sort of began his.
My dad went into the apprenticeship his senior year of high school.
Exactly. So, when you were talking about infantilization,
right.
The fact of the matter is, it was two generations ago, not one, but two generations ago, that you started your damn life at 18. You didn't start it at.
Yeah. I started mine at 18. I didn't go to college. I was on air afternoons, 18 years old.
Now, let's get back and cycle back to your daughter. Mm-hmm. What's her name?
Emma.
Emma. So sweet Emma is 12, and you're already seeing some lability with her mood.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's chemistry, of course. Obviously, that's chemistry. Yeah. So now that's chemistry that's now starting because of health and well-being at 12, and that's chemical all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just where she's at. Mm-hmm. Now go out 15 years, and she's still sort of in a dependency. She's still, mm-hmm. 10 to 12 years, she's still dependent, restless as hell, doesn't have anything to do other than school or maybe college or work. We are underusing our capacity to work. When I come into this show, the Bob and Tom Show, I come into this podcast, and I have to tell you, from my age and generation, I'm amazed at the work ethic. I mean, every damn day, 6 o'clock in the morning, 4 hours a day of content, no matter come rain or come shine. Mm-hmm. That's a lost ethic. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, people, young people, don't have enough opportunities to kind of get into actually doing work, let alone marriage and kids at, you know, 18 or 19. Our bodies are way more equipped for adult responsibility at 17 and 18 than they were. Then, you know, we wait until they're 25.
My mom, I mean, you did not miss work.
Yeah.
You just did.
Oh, no.
No matter how. No, you worked. You got to work. My dad was the same way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now, sometimes I need a mental health day.
Yeah, that's all right, though. But the contrast is you work hard and then you have a pullback day or a pullback time. But now it's all pullback time and then periodically you step into work.
Yeah.
You know. Not a bad gig.
Is that really happening, or is that just our understanding of what's happening?
Well, again, as I go back to that, what the companies say, what the HR people say, is their observation of this generation coming up is that they don't seem to have the will or the desire or the passion to work and to work hard and delay gratification. I just think these kids are really restless, and no one has kind of like beckoned them into something that's going to be meaningful for them.
It just hasn't hit with whoever.
Exactly. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Inner turmoil needs to come out. It can come out constructively or destructively.
Mm-hmm. That's
true. If you're restless because of all that chemistry, you need ways to have it come out onto a canvas. Ernest Becker, the great psychologist, said artists can be the healthiest people because that inner turmoil comes out onto a canvas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The canvas is comedy. The canvas is the microphone. The canvas is speaking. The canvas is paint. The canvas is whatever it is at school, studying, whatever. And if you don't have a canvas to receive it, you'll just, whatever you do, drink, well, screw around, whatever.
I found the best thing I can do, Saturdays and Sundays are kind of not the greatest, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've started to be more active on the weekends with like going out and doing shows with friends of mine.
Yep.
And because in the lowest of lows, I would think in my head, there's no way I can do the show this morning. There's no fucking way.
Yeah,
I just am not.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I'd get in here and I'd start and something would happen and something happened after that and that and that. And you immediately do kind of feel a little better.
When you're repressed, it takes something external to pull it out of you.
I was a big wallower. I like to wallow.
Yeah, wallow?
Oh,
wallow and pout?
Wallow, pout.
You?
Oh.
Get out.
Glare. Oh.
See, I got to tell you, I mean this as your friend. I love your transparency and honesty. I love what's happening to you.
I can't not.
No.
I can't not be quiet. I mean, I'm like an alcoholic who's not drinking anymore. Yeah. Although I tend to drink a little bit, like almost every day, right. Not to pass out. Drunk,
every day?
It's mood management.
Not every day. Not every. No. I haven't yet today.
Nice.
I know, but you tend to exaggerate also. So
I've told you a million times, I don't exaggerate. Okay? What's wrong with you?
I know, but be honest, you probably drink, let's say, three nights a week. Before you go to bed, you'll have a bracer.
No, I'd say maybe four nights a week.
Yeah.
All right, that's moderate. It's even healthy.
Maybe yesterday I was painfully aware that you can't buy liquor on Sunday in Indiana. maybe I was a little irritated.
You should
I had
switch to red wine.
I had beer, though.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Could you go to a neighbor?
No. I had I'm a selective alcoholic. I had alcohol in the house, but uh-huh. I didn't want to drink that alcohol.
Sure.
So, but our alcoholics, like, they're drinking like Vitalis and all this.
Well, it comes right? to that place.
Yeah.
It starts like, light like, and then goes.
Yeah. They drink Listerine and yeah. See, so I'm not drinking everything. I just like.
It's good for you.
Yeah. And
it
I'm
is good
not,
for you. In moderation, it's good.
If I'm not home, I try not to drink at all.
Sure.
Or if I can't walk to where I'm going or mm-hmm. have someone drive me, I'm not. Yeah. So. Now
this all sounds
very alcoholic
yes.
and addictive and
no,
all.
No, no, I no, no, no. That's my area of specialty, and trust me, you're fine.
But maybe the best part is that you're telling us.
Yes.
If you weren't telling us, that would
right.
be a problem.
That's right.
Right.
What is the power you're admiring for his transparency? What is that power of you know, if once you get that, because it took him a while to get that. He would keep it in. He would now he's
but
letting
he would
it
not,
out.
I'm going to have to disagree.
I'm saying in the past year with this podcast.
I'm right here.
Sure, I know. But when you say that he would keep it all in, he had a very specific
Vince.
Way. No, a very specific way of not verbally saying how he felt. But you could look
yeah.
at his face and
yeah.
look at his body language yeah. and know if you said anything to him, he would destroy you.
Yeah, yeah. It
yes.
was, yeah. You were expressing, but just maybe not verbally.
I've apologized to you on this podcast
no, I'm saying
many times.
All of us, when I worked here, and we don't say anything to Jake. Mm-hmm. Don't talk to him during the show. Don't say anything.
I like the sound of that, actually.
It's awesome, yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
But think about that. If, in fact, you are inclined, you're like introverted or you tend to be reserved, you wind up getting into a career and a business where it is yanked out of you at a visceral level. You're not just
Will,
talking about sports.
That's exactly what happened.
That's right.
I said this a million times. My dream was to sit in a room mm-hmm. by myself and play music and be on the radio.
Yeah.
That was all I wanted and read commercials
yep.
because I've, it sounds stupid, but I've always been able to read and I've got a reasonably nice voice. But this whole Bob and Tom thing, this whole oh there's Chick, this whole is so jarring. I mean, I think I know more about it.
We went to breakfast this morning, and this girl. Comes
no,
out.
But how did I?
You did great.
How did
she
I?
She came around
that?
The corner. She came around the corner. She wasn't our waitress. She came around the corner. She goes, "You on the radio?" And he goes, "Yes."
I did not say that.
Yeah, you did. You did. You were nice. You said yes. And she goes, "Can you come back here in the kitchen with me? This guy, Matt, he likes you and he don't want to come back here. Will you come talk to him?"
I'm sure you'll get that.
I sure will.
And it was so funny because he got yeah. up, walked back there, came back. He goes, "Anyway," and just continued with the story we were in the middle of.
Well, no, but in the past, what would I have done?
Oh, you would have. It would have wrecked your day.
Jesus, what
yeah.
the hell?
Yeah.
Can
yeah.
I? You know, it's mm-hmm. just I mean.
But, you know, some of that's just age. I mean, some of that's being 35 versus 50. Mm-hmm. Some of that is just, you know, just some
you
of the.
You run out of people to be mad at.
Well, the gas goes out of you, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's like just. But it is true, especially when there's a recognizability.
Mm-hmm.
Did I ever tell you when I was recognized?
No.
Listen to this. You'll love this.
All right.
So, you know, I'm the chaplain for the police.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I do the counseling. Mm-hmm. And so I got called to a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So suicide. And it was like in an area where they had a whole shutdown of the community, blah, 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 blah. So I go there. And so, you know, I'm going to leave. And there was a relative of the guy. You know, I went up and I said, you know, I'm really sorry, whatever. And he looked at me and he goes, "Your voice sounds familiar."
Oh,
said,
goodness.
"Oh, really?" He goes, "You're on the radio?" I said, "Aww. Yes." He goes, "Dr. Will, Bob and Tom, great to meet you."
I mean,
isn't that sweet?
That yeah. is nice. And that, even in that situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I told him it was inappropriate, but no, I didn't. But people feel comfort when they know you. You're known.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who know you. That's why I said you're a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is getting to the point now, though, where I go to the world's most confusing marsh, the mm-hmm. Circle Marsh, and they all, "Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?" And it's like my own little neighborhood now, and they're all my friends. The CVS girls love me, and it's just,
but
"What
you doing, honey?"
You know, so
there's something significantly different about going from your unique place as the cast member participating mm-hmm. in the conversation that's dictated collectively
yeah.
to this, which is wonderful. I mean, what we talk about here on this is just, it's awesome for you. It's changing.
You can't not be changed. You made me remember something too about, we're going to try to talk about parents and kids. my kids, because my oldest, I wasn't on the Bob and Tom show before. I mean, she was grown. But my two youngest, they always, I don't know how they took it, but they wouldn't say, like in school, if someone would say, hey, is your dad Chick McGee? And they would go, no, my dad's in advertising or whatever. I mean, they would try to.
But who told them to say that?
Well, their mom did, but I think it was her way.
It was a well-intentioned privacy.
Protecting them and not being,
because
you know,
what has happened now.
But seriously, honestly, I still, right now, I mean, it's over and it's okay. But saying that, maybe it's not. But it hurt my feelings a little bit because I thought, you know, I've worked.
I'm proud of what I've done.
I've worked hard, and I'm pretty good at what I do. And they're kind of, if they're lying about it, I feel like they're ashamed of it.
Right. But if you've also shared with me that there's people in your lives who didn't ever think this was a real job. Is that right?
Well, that's true.
I think anyone in this business, anyone in a kind of a performance or, you know, where media business is, you know, kind of marginalized by people.
Right.
Well, you know, quite frankly, Dr. Will, I'm glad you brought that up. And Jason, you can listen too if you'd like.
Listening, boss.
No, because Jess and I just had this conversation because I've tried to tell her how naturally,
please don't.
How naturally good she is at what we're doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how easy it comes to her, and how engaging, and people are gravitated toward her. And
yep.
And she goes, I know, but I just don't feel like. And I'm going, look, you told me one time that I was the best at what I did, mm-hmm. and that was one of the biggest compliments I've ever gotten absolutely. In my life. And now you're telling me that something you said that I was the best at, you discount as it's not a real job and this isn't really anything that I'm doing. Nah. So, you know, I mean,
it's also my job to take care of other people. I'm not worried about me.
Yeah, but the whole honest, I mean, like, well, how many people can't relate to the mix where, you know, everyone who's listening, I mean, when I listen to the podcast, it's delightful on your ears. It just is. And you get a feel for the voice and the personality and all three of you and whatever guest you have in here. It's more than the sum of its parts.
It's exactly right. I mean, they might come in for, they might smell something nice. That'd be me. But mm-hmm. they'll come in for the taste of the pastries. That's you two guys and what we bring together. Maybe not you, Jason, but you know what? I listened to I was on the road for like 6 or 8 hours total this weekend. I listened to like 7 or 8 different podcasts, and I have no idea how they're on the air and how they're as popular as what they are. I'm not kidding. And I listened to a local morning radio show.
Did we open the show with being humble? Is that what we talked about? Okay.
Well, I think the best at being humble.
That we're real. That's the thing. And there's so much out there that's not real.
See if this helps. See if this helps. You know? See if this helps. There's a, you know,
can you help her to accept that she's good at something? Because she thinks the only thing she's good at is taking care of other people, and that's not the truth.
It's okay if she's not. You know, we're all kind of deep down kind of modest about this.
It's also still new.
It's very new.
It's new. But you know, let me see if this helps. There's a treatment approach in
here we go.
In therapy that you might have heard this word. It's a German word. It's called Gestalt. A Gestalt.
Oh, yeah.
And a Gestalt means like complete or total.
Yes.
This is an organism. I mean, there's the personalities, this Chick, Jess, Jason, the guest who comes in and out. But it's the Gestalt. It's the totality of the organism that is the appeal to people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it is. You know, some may hear your voice and resonate with that, Chick's voice, Jason's voice, whatever, in particular, but it's the gestalt, it's the totality of all of you together that is what's growing. And that's true of the Bob and Tom show. I mean, that was true of everything. Every radio show that grows, it's the organism that you're listening to.
Mm-hmm. And if somebody's missing, you know it.
That's what we've always said about the big show, and it's the same thing in here.
That's right.
I mean, when one of us is missing.
That's right. There's a big hole. Or when a new voice comes in and substitutes and it's jarring.
And he's talking right now. Thank you. Hello. Hello, test. Hello.
It's all good.
All right. What else did we want to talk about? I'm not at the end, though, am I?
No,
I
mean, no. When you have other guests say comedians, I mean, is the tone very different than when I'm on?
No.
It's the same sort of...
Well, no, there's a little... Some of it's a...
We're very familiar with you.
We're still trying to... I mean, this is 60-something podcast, and we're still...
Yeah.
I mean, there are benchmarks of the podcast that...
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I can go back and go, okay, this podcast, we did this, and that was good, and I listened to it and cried because that happened, you know? And, okay, we took a step, and...
It's growing an act. I mean, it's very similar. I told you that story when I first worked my first out-of-town job, and I was in Pittsburgh Comedy Club, and I'm a comic about 2 years, and I was at the Pittsburgh Comedy Club, and this is like 1981, and the headliner was Jay Leno. Mm-hmm. And Jay was not known. He hadn't been on, but he was like known among the comics.
Sure.
And the other comedian from Chicago was saying, man, I'm really frustrated with my career. And Leno goes, well, how long have you been, I think I might have told this on the air before. I said, you know, how long have you been doing this? And he says, about 5 years. And Leno's crack was, well, that means you just really know who you are on stage. Your act is just, your identity is just forming. Mm-hmm. Now your career begins. Mm-hmm. Well, that 5 years is for stand-up comedy. But this, it's like, what is it? Is it, you know, 30 versus the 10th show, the 60th mm-hmm. versus the 50th show, the 100th versus, it's a growing thing that will grow and morph. And I think it's on its way to doing something really amazing. I'm proud to be part of it.
Oh, thanks.
Did you hear that? You know, did you hear that, Jason?
He's typing. He's doing something.
No, I was looking up. We had a really nice email that I'd sent to both of you, I think.
Which one?
I delete all the emails you send me before I read them. That's not true. Why would I do that?
No, the guy said the last four were really good. You guys are on a roll. And what I took from it was literally, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical here, but here's what we had. We had a black guy. Mm-hmm. We had a musician. Mm-hmm. We had a gay guy, and we were at the state fair.
Yeah,
four mm-hmm. completely different things.
Yes. Yeah.
And they enjoyed them. They said we were really hitting it on all of them.
The variety, because what's consistent? The consistency is the three of you,
right?
And who do you bring in? I mean, that's it,
right? That's what I'm trying to get out to these two.
Mm-hmm. I
can affirm.
Okay, let's visit the fact that. I came in here to intern when I was 20 years old, only because Don Stuck was my neighbor and a family friend. Mm-hmm. I was not a communications major. I was a women's studies major. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Ah! So this is the first time I've ever been outside of Tom going, hey, can you read this voice for this bit? I've never been on the air
right.
at all.
Sure.
Until this?
Until this.
I love it.
No, but I'm... How, you know what? How natural is she? How good is she?
Totally. I mean, as a listener, I find it very appealing and very attractive to listen to your voice, your way. It's extremely appealing. I mean, I'm sorry you don't feel it inside your own head, but I kind of don't give a shit about that. I do, as your friend, but in
my
other words,
opinion of myself is not important. Yeah.
No, your opinion of you. His opinion of you.
No, yeah, my opinion. No, I thought my opinion of me.
No. I guess what I'm saying is it's the same thing I'd say to anyone who comes in and who is discombobulated, and I say, really, your self-worth, your sense of yourself is incorrect.
Right.
My judgment about you is more accurate than your own.
Sure. Well, with me, it's just these are two people that I'm very close with.
Yes.
So this isn't, if you, like, I get very nervous when we bring someone in that I don't know, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
I do.
Or
I don't,
when
I don't
we're really, out in person. Doing
or we're
the
out in person, and mm-hmm. I don't like to do it out in public either. No, right. I just.
Well, you probably didn't either, but after many right. years of having the experience, you're probably acclimated
still,
to it.
Yeah,
well,
sure,
but performing.
Sure.
In other words, you go to a comedy club and it's like you're in the green room, mm-hmm. you come out, right. you do your thing, and you go back.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, but she buys in. Her natural ability of curiosity comes out, and I'm going to give the best example. We had a guy named Jared Logan, mm-hmm. who we did not know until the morning he was mm-hmm. on the Bob and Tom show, mm-hmm. and we just on a whim said, Jess, get over here. We're going to do a podcast with mm-hmm. this guy who we met today.
Mm-hmm.
And he was great. We were having fun with him. We were curious. You know, it was a whole different experience. And she was asking great questions about this and that. What about that? And she didn't know the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't know the guy. So she was comfortable in it. And we all were comfortable in it. And it was just a fun
just natural
time.
And organic.
It was natural.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And
but
organic.
But I want to take this one step further. What Uh-oh. Is it about him that he wants her to acknowledge how good she is? What is it about him that it frustrates him mm-hmm. that she doesn't acknowledge it? What is that?
Yeah, that's a curiosity. I mean, you know.
It's tough for me to understand. How many times have I told you I wish you could see yourself like I do for 5 minutes?
There you go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's tough for me to understand why you, I mean, I don't want you to, but that's part of your attractiveness is that you aren't confident. And
well, that's right. See, you're talking partner to partner relationship experience. Mm-hmm. I'm talking
that's
to you
true.
As a dad.
Sure. Okay.
And as a father, mm-hmm. I would, you know, being in touch with my Brooklyn daddy, I would say, the hell's wrong with you? You're perfect and you're sweet. And you're lovely, and you need to go with my opinion. You're
delightful. Which is what her dad would probably say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, probably
it's
yes.
about, it's kind of like the fat little girl who's now Hang on.
Blossomed.
Who's now blossomed thin and beautiful, but in their head is still has to rely on her personality instead of, I'm beautiful. You know what I'm trying to say?
The therapist uses are like tapes in your head or recordings in your head. You're listening to old tapes.
Yeah. That's true, because we've talked about this too, about the things that my dad planted seeds in me mentally about the way men think and the way, so it was always like, be quick. Be quick with your thoughts, be quick with your tongue, because,
fathers always fear that their little girl is a target.
Yeah,
and they need them to not be naive and defend themselves against predators.
Exactly. And my dad gave me the most extreme, versions of things that could happen so that I would be prepared. But to this day, I still view myself as an object to men.
That's right. Now go back to your dad. And I mean this with sensitivity.
Sure.
I mean, it depends. In those scenarios, sometimes it's because the dad themselves were,
I don't want you to be with anybody that was like me.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're working with people with other men, and they have that view of men always on the hunt, because even if that wasn't your personal experience and you're in a working environment where all you hear, for example, anecdotally is, men always like going after, then it's like, oh my God, that could be my daughter. Oh my God. You know what I mean? And so it's a protective device. Now, listen to this. This is relevant. In 1943, on the East Coast, was a study done. 80% of married couples grew up within 20 blocks of each other.
Wow.
Think about that. And those marriages stayed together. So from this point about protection, the fact of the matter is, I'm your dad. I know that it is likely that you are going to meet and fall in love with someone from a family who is socioeconomically like us, who is kind of connected to us, etc. I know or can find out about all the personalities, and I have more confidence that I can trust that, this one's a jerk or that one's a whatever. But the majority of people who you'll be under the control of or the influence of are reliable people. But today, because of how scattered people are, you send your kid off to the military, to college, to whatever, and they meet someone from Nebraska. You don't know who the hell they are. Mm-hmm. There's a higher level of worry as a dad about who's out there, and do you know who's out there?
Mm-hmm. So how does Jason keep guys away from his daughters? I mean, what does he tell that? Or
as I said,
you tell your daughter. I mean,
militant control of the peer group.
Is it going to be that extreme, or
it's militant control of the peer group?
See, that word militant scares me. Honestly,
it is, though, because there's the things
you have to be that. I mean, isn't there some responsibility you put on the child, or do you have to be that aware and constantly?
Are we in a helicopter? You're right. Absolutely. It's a balancing act that's tricky. But because of in other words, that's an argument to, if you stay in your house and you are in the same neighborhood in the same school, you then have a modicum of that phenomena where you're likely to know who they're with, who they're not with. Mm-hmm. And I just had a case where somebody came for therapy because the parents came. They're scared to death, with good reason, because the son inadvertently got involved with a young woman who really was probably a borderline personality disorder, and began like stalking. And it was the kid's naivete that allowed this to get to a place where this unfortunately distressed young woman lost her boundaries. Okay, so. The kid is off to college, and so there's no way he's going to be protected. And so your dad, I want to know everyone who's in your life, and if they meet me, and that's the cliche about that. And so now what does that do to you? I mean, it's like, uh-oh, I got inculcated. There's danger out there. Danger, danger, danger. You know what I mean? And you really then become hyper alert to trust your instincts. Is this person trustworthy, or is that just the mask of the person?
That's tough.
It is tough.
Yeah.
So the longer I'm around you, even as a person who is not related to you, I'm not your dad, I'm not an uncle, but as I step more into your life and become more around you, your defenses start coming down, because it's like, oh, okay, I don't see another side of him. I do trust from the testimony and the experience that Will is who Will is, and that's it, and I can relax my defenses around him. And that's what we're all seeking.
And that's tough to do, because still to this day, I usually think the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Like they can't want to talk to me for the sake of talking to me. They have an ulterior motive. There's something else going on. And I guess that's good. It's not good for the people that I've dated.
So
and
now
been
you go with Chick.
With,
and so Chick, who, he may have had a history of a growling exterior, but he's a pussycat and a teddy bear. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do you not know that I'm actually safe? Mm-hmm. How do you not know? And it's like, I think you're great. Why do you not trust my opinion that I sense from you and I'm trustworthy?
That's good. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. good. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because that does lead to a lot of frustration for me, but then that goes back to, and then it almost feeds on itself again, you know?
And some of this is also helped by, or maybe frustrated by, your career. Because I will bet someone in your career, I know this is the case, you have an authenticity radar that's different and more highly evolved than anyone else's. Because of the people who schlep in and out of here, mm-hmm. showbiz people, et cetera.
Oh, sure.
You have a nose for bullshit.
Oh.
And authenticity.
Well, almost, yeah, it's way off the chart. Absolutely. What it should be. But I know that. So I always, how many times have I looked at you guys and go, well, you know, he seems like a nice guy, but
something's
I don't
off.
Know.
So
know.
Therefore, because
I mean,
of that.
I almost always say, I don't know.
That's right. And so because of that, you're saying to her, mm-hmm. listen, I have the mother of all BS meters. I'm telling you, you're great. How do you not trust me? How do you not take?
I don't know, because I also look to see who they've surrounded themselves with before, yeah. and that makes me go.
Yeah, but were they perpetrator or a victim? He was probably a victim.
They're probably a victim.
Probably.
I want to hedge my bets here.
I'm the generic victim.
What I always find interesting, and I know I've said this to Chick 1,000 times, is that my dad's always kind of known what was going to happen, and he's always said this
and he
is
knows what's
this
gonna
is
happen
this
now.
Is yeah, and he's like, this is probably what you should do. Mm-hmm. This is who this person is.
Yeah,
and I usually don't do what he says, and I usually need to figure it out for myself.
And his radar, it turns
and
out, in the end
always,
was good.
He's always yeah. right. Always right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an intuitive process that comes that gets better with maturity, and you have it. I mean, you have it because, you know, especially I think it gets accelerated.
You know what?
Or accentuated.
And it's getting better.
Sure.
The saner, I for lack of a better term. Well, I would say
the less distracted you
yeah,
are, the
right.
more focused and present you are. Your authenticity radiates through, and you're going, "Oh my God, what are you? You know, I'm
yeah.
Trust me on this."
I'm like.
Okay, you just told me at breakfast this morning.
No, what are you doing?
I'm just saying, you told me at breakfast this morning that that the more sane you get, the crazier I look, is what you said to me at breakfast.
No, was it said with joy?
I said, the saner I get, the crazier you seem.
Seem, okay, not look.
Look,
seem.
But I'm not saying you are crazy. You're not.
Oh, my
gosh.
That's like the classic guy that says he calls his girlfriend a bitch. He goes, I didn't say you were. I said you were acting like a bitch.
Yeah,
it's like that. It's like when a guy does that.
Danny McBride, I'm not saying that you're a whore, but you dress like a whore.
You have whore-like tendencies. That's what he said.
See, that same thing.
You're whorish.
With my daughter, I've been with my wife. I said, boy, she's a jerk today. No, she's acting like a jerk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is that?
But is that the difference? But it's the way that your wife handles your daughter, is that, is she more understanding of what's going on and you're kind of playing the dad, male guy,
I
don't get this?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And she's been helpful with me to go, listen, what
but
is
you're
going
on? You're not. You don't really.
She gets it.
You don't really put that off like, oh, this is a Dane thing. I just don't get it.
I've had to, yeah. I've had to.
It's not illegitimate to think about a mom and a emerging pubescent girl mm-hmm. Having an empathy and a connection.
Absolutely.
That understands. It's totally
and she's
appropriate.
There for,
that's right.
You know, hour-long talks, you know, friends. I mean, she, yeah.
Fathers and sons get stuff that they, you know.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So maybe that's what happened, because I lived with my dad through puberty, and I didn't have that sympathy of, this is what you're going through.
Right,
from the mother.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I had my dad going. I mean, my mom was my friend. I saw my mom on the weekends and she was my buddy. She was my friend. Mm-hmm.
Very indulgent and whatever you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
And very little parenting, really.
Yeah, we were just friends.
Right.
And my dad was very, very mad. I mean, he was in a very guy sense of, why are you crying about this? Is this worth crying about? This mm-hmm. is what you need to be doing. Like, get out here and pick up sticks or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. just never, just lots of, I think he just always wanted us to be hardworking.
Well, yeah. And in other words, he wanted to evoke the assertive piece of you so that you could protect yourself and
right.
be protected. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carl Jung, the great psychoanalyst, said, mm-hmm. you know, in every man, there's what he called the anima, the
right.
feminine spirit,
the
and for, you know, and the animus. And so fathers tend to want to connect with the animus of their daughter to be assertive and take charge. And moms, you know, want to connect with their sons to be more sensitive and to be have get in touch with their anima.
But how do you grow? I was going to say grow, but how do you have a daughter who ends up with the proper amount of feminine qualities, mm-hmm. proper amount of masculine qualities, or even for a boy? I mean, that, I mean, they're, you know?
Well, the research says that obvious as it may seem, you can't overstate how important the peer group is. In other words, the influence of the people who are right around you. And as you individuate and want to step away from mom and dad's authority, you want to be independent and feel your own power, you do so by ensconcing yourself in whoever is around you. And so therefore, the parent has to monitor, is this a healthy surrounding? Mm-hmm. You can release the kid into a good peer group if it's a good peer group, but you have to be careful to guard it.
Yeah, and that's my son's 10, and he couldn't have better friends. He has a great group of friends.
Yep.
My daughter is 8, and that mean girl thing has started since kindergarten.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's quiet, and she's a little more reserved and shy, and she gets stepped on really easy.
Yep.
And this is one of the hardest things I've had to experience.
It's a valid critique of schools that they tend to, you know, adult teachers and administrators tend to underestimate how toxic that environment is at a level of subtlety. Because just because they're supervised in the classroom and the mean girls can't be mean in the classroom, well, hello, butthead, out in the hallway and on the bus and way home. I mean, you know, there's no supervision there. Who's stepping in to be that protective?
And that's the thing about this bullying. You see bullying, stop bullying. And I've heard some parents, they're getting out of hand. People aren't being bullied. Like, bullshit.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, these are people who weren't bullied who are saying that. Yeah.
And my wife, Sally, who's been a school principal, public school principal for years and years, says, you know, it makes her furious when people blame the schools about the bullying. It's like, what's not happening when they're in our charge? It's not happening in the classroom. Right. It's not even happening. You know what I mean? It's happening when they're outside on the periphery of the school setting. I mean, how much you want to, hello, parents, alert. Parents step into this.
So. Oh yeah, mine. I was in seventh grade, and every day on the way home from school on the bus, bullied. I mean, just verbally. Just three girls that were older just had me in tears every day.
Yeah,
you know. And our bus driver wouldn't know. Nicest old guy you'd ever meet.
Yep.
But he had no idea.
No, clueless.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to share it because if I shared it, I was weak. So I would get off the bus and cry, and then by the time my dad got home, I was tough and I was ready to mow the grass and do whatever I needed to do.
Bless your heart.
Yeah. That's just, you know, something. It's terrible.
Jess, honey, I will never hurt you. I will never hurt you. Being around people with whom you are safe is key.
Yeah.
Being around people who are safe.
What about
safe.
You? Were you bullied there, Jason? There, Jay Bird? There, Jay Dog?
You know, I look back, my childhood was me playing outside. Mm-hmm. That was me, which is kind of frustrating because my girls don't do that.
Christy and I were talking about this, and she said that her daughters, for the first time, I mean, she made a point of discussing it. This wasn't on the air. It was off the air. Thank you. She said that her daughter played like flashlight tag outside. They spent a lot of time
with bicycles, and they freaked
Friday
out.
Friday like, and this Saturday is great. Night. Yeah, yeah. And she was like so happy that they were spending time outside.
I know.
And Chrissy was like, "Hello, this is how America used to be."
Yeah. So, is it the screen time that's like
sure?
And we limit the screen time.
We do
It's still. I went last year. Went through this whole process of getting Emma her big girl bike.
Bike, yeah.
And she's ridden it 3 times. Mm-hmm. You know, this year, I think once or twice. And that's because I said, hey, let's go ride.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, and it's just like,
I lived on my bike.
I got home. I got homework done and I'm out the door. That was me. But to answer your question, like on the bus, yes, there were always older guys, but somehow this little dweeb of a guy got in with those guys. Yeah. I don't know how. I think it was sort of like listening to the Bob and Tom show. I kind of yucked at their jokes, and somehow they allowed me into their circle, and I just kind of sat there quietly.
Yeah,
I was really.
I'm not kidding you. And there was older guys that would give other people
wouldn't come
help.
Over and go, I'm just going to hit you and see what you do. Nothing. No, none of that.
Mm-hmm. And I was completely the guy they should have been.
See, but I was always big for my age, so the bullies were like, okay, we're gonna pick on this guy because he's the biggest. But I was the biggest, the tallest, the fattest, or whatever you want to say. But I was a teddy bear. I'm the biggest pussy on the face of the earth. I mean, I don't like confrontation. I don't want to address issues. Especially with myself.
As a kid.
Did you just say, as a kid? There
as
we
a
go.
Kid. Yeah, as a kid.
You don't like confrontation.
That's why I thirst for it now, I guess.
That's a possibility.
Other than professionally.
Other than professionally, oh, well, how many times have I said this? If I could run my personal life like I do my professional life, I'd have been married 44 years now, or however the hell long it would be. But I don't know. No, that's not right.
That's not right at all.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I got you.
Be a little bit more loosey-goosey and not quite so. Life and death, how did that get started with me? Like, everything is either the end of the world or, well, I don't know if, yeah, or it's the worst thing ever. You know, I mean, I speak in absolutes.
Well, you know.
I mean, in absolutes all the time.
Well, I think it's a maturity, and it's an awareness about, look, you know, this is life. It's existential. It's, you know, I mean, it's
but
the big
thoughts.
But you
know what? The closer you get to
demise,
you know, this is, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. What is it, the ultimate enlightenment is your wish to be dead or something? Is that,
well,
correct?
Well, again, I think I quoted him before, Ernest Becker. His book was called Denial of Death, and he says the cause of the self, the cause of we, the cause of the self is your awareness of your mortality, mm-hmm. and at different ages and stages, you stop thinking about an endless future and think about a finite amount of time and what is the quality of life I want to have in that time. You know, the people from the East have it all over us in many ways.
Oh, yeah. They say, oh, God, yeah.
You know, the best, did I tell you this last time? The best definition of neurosis I ever heard was it's an inability to keep your thought in the present moment. Mm-hmm. It tends to drift forward in worry or ruminating back in what happened to you. Mm-hmm. And you keep yourself centered. And that's Zen. That's Eastern, you know, it's yoga. It's like being, it's also even in traditional terms, Judeo-Christian, in the sense that it's about being in the now. It's also Freud. It's also psychology, being in the present moment.
And they have, the Asian dialect even has like 50 different words for hand or whatever. I mean, it can be an open hand or a fist, or I mean, it's just.
So now let's get this down to the nitty gritty. Let's say you and I were out and about doing some activity, whatever, we're you know, fishing or something like that. And we're talking. Mm-hmm. And even though an hour beforehand or an hour after, you and I each would tend to have our mind drift toward worries or whatever. But in those moments when we're sitting there and chatting, like now, you're in the present moment. And there's a sense of peace in the present moment, because the only two variables that the research shows help you with stress is distraction and relaxation. Mm-hmm. And so the more I'm distracted by engaging with you, you and I are right here, right now. As soon as that's why alone, when I was in psychoanalysis, training as an analyst, my analyst, Janet Bichon, it was so cliche, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And she said one time in her breathy voice, being alone takes you to very bad places. She's absolutely right. Time alone can be restorative.
Right.
But.
Right. But you can't. What do I want to say? Jason?
But you can't jump into that. You can't go cold turkey, is what I'm saying.
No,
is
that's
sure.
Right.
You have to practice being alone.
I had growing pains.
You
I mean, yeah. I know it. Yeah, I know.
The text I'm reading now is self-regulation. It's about the research about how to regulate your thoughts and your mind. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you need a discipline to do that. So if you want to be alone and have your alone time be restorative, you know, there are some things you can practice. You can, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately you can do like a meditation thing, or you can lose yourself in a novel, do some reading, like distracting reading. Mm-hmm. You can engage in media or television, like football. When you're watching that game tonight, you will be all there. You will be right there.
It's a joy. There's never been a truer statement in my life. This has been the longest off season of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
That Sunday and Saturday too with college football. I mean that fills a lot of you know, and it's a distraction.
That's
It's you're alone, but you're not alone.
No.
I mean, it's very healing.
Well, think about again. Think about where your thoughts are going. Yeah, I mean, your thoughts are staying in the room. They're in the room.
Right.
They're right there.
Yep.
But this is something that's also been with you since you were young.
Exactly.
This is the one relationship that you have had.
That's why I place a very high value on television.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me finish. I mean, because television for me personally, television, that medium more or less saved my life when I was a kid.
But there was such
turmoil downstairs.
Yes.
And I'm in my room. I plainly remember getting my first 12-inch black and white television and building a stand for it and sticking it on the wall and getting my first programs. I couldn't, and you could just be in the TV and not downstairs with them arguing.
Connected to what I said about neurotic discomfort.
And
the fact of the matter is, it's healthy.
To this day.
That's right.
It's like if there's, you know, if there's nothing on, I'll go to a book, but I'm in trouble.
But now, psychologically, I mean, that's absolutely right. Now, psychologically, the most optimal healthy way to distract yourself is something that has this nice balance of restoration coming in and engagement going out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
right.
So you're doing plenty of that in your job, but you're right. I mean, based on what I was saying with distraction and entertainment, guess what? Watching, you know, totally immersed, engaged in watching the Redskins, yep. It has both the quality of distraction and relaxation. I mean, there it is. So it's healthy. I endorse it.
And you love talking about it after the fact.
I love talking about it.
There you go. That's right.
Hearing about it. I love going over the games.
And he goes online. There's a community of fans. You know, this happened, that happened.
That's right. I met a guy at the fair.
Those huge Redskins fans.
Now, see, in your case, I would be more worried. Let's say you had a career or a job where you were working from your home and you were alone all the time. And you were not, you know, you get plenty of fill of interpersonal engagement.
Well, I mean, no, but even in the past, I mean, 6 or 7 months, I mean, I'm out more with other people than
life balance, baby.
You know, than not at all. You know.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
And these are also friends of your choosing, which I think is very different too. You're not in a relationship. You're not with your wife or your girlfriend's friends. Mm-hmm. These are friends that you've decided to have in your life.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I find myself every now and then wanting to, not very often, but. That was a joke, guys. I'm looking forward. They're all coming over tonight to, you know, watch the Redskins.
That's
game.
Awesome.
And it's, you know, we're gonna do whatever we're gonna do. Yep. And
you know,
go
the way I've said it,
and
it's like it's like you know, think about this. Who can be with you and you still feel restored? Like, for example, you have a great event. Let's say you have a dinner or some sort of a party or get together at your house or something. You know, and it's really fun. It's really great. And then when they go home, they leave. You go, oh, that was great, but oh, now it's just us.
Exactly.
Who can still be in the room and have it feel
that?
Just us? You know what I mean? Who's
my
you know
kids?
There you go.
That's it.
You know, when my son comes down from Fort Wayne, or our daughter and you know, a son-in-law are in the house. It's just us, you know, and that feels, I'm not on guard. I can be who I am, et cetera.
I have a question about that because in my situations, and we've all been there with in-laws or ex-in-laws or whatever it is, I know that with me, there's things that have happened to me from in-laws or with my dad to my spouse or whomever or boyfriend or whatever. And I always think, remember this for when you have a daughter-in-law or you have a son-in-law. Yeah. Don't do this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
What is that? Is that a jealousy thing? Is that a not accepting? Is that a, this is still my little girl? This is still my little boy?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Why wouldn't it be? Like I said the other day to my dad, when my son gets married, if and when my son gets married, I don't ever want him or his wife to know if I dislike her. I will fake it because I don't want that stress on them and their relationship to worry about what the hell my opinion is.
Right. It's a matter of accepting. I mean, I can remember when our daughter was a lot younger and she was just out of school and she was, now here's Sally from the Midwest, you know, and so I'm from New York. And so she meets and gets involved with this guy who's like, hey, I love your daughter. She's a piece of work. Swear to God. He was a stockbroker.
She got such an ass on her, I tell you. Good job, buddy.
He was a stockbroker from Brooklyn.
Oh, my God.
I can't wait to take care of her. I mean, it was the shine from his pinky ring.
Well, of course,
she was fascinated with him because he was so flamboyant and colorful. And Sally was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do if she marries him? I said, well, we're going to be there. And then you're going to get divorced. Well, we'll be there for that. It's like, what can you do?
We're going to ride this out.
That's the right
metaphor. Are you sure you want to do this?
We're going to ride it out.
Yeah.
That's right. And then after we sort of said, okay, honey, you know, she was like, I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah.
You broke my heart. I swear to God, you broke my heart.
So I guess to sum up, it's impossible to be a parent and raise a healthy child.
Absolutely.
Pretty much.
Well, you know what? I always love that expression. And poor Hillary Clinton got blasted for this when she said it takes a village, which is basically an old African, you know.
Right.
And it takes a village. And then who was it? Leno said, he goes, it takes a village to keep an eye on my husband.
Yeah.
but the idea that it does, in most other cultures where there is, you know, even in the midst of poverty and other challenges where there's emotional well-being, very often it's because the community, the neighbors, the surrounded, the extended family takes responsibility collectively to be there for. So whatever fault you have, is made up for by the aunt. Can I tell you one quick story? Last story?
Go.
Yeah. This couple sent their son to me because the son was having a lot of conflict with the father. They weren't getting along and the son was being really belligerent, so they sent the son. And so he comes and he was like not responsive. He was there against his will. Right. So after about the second time I saw him, I said, would you please do me a favor? Honest to God, we can speed this up. Would you go home and ask somebody, your mother or somebody, about your father? And so he goes home. He comes back 1 week later, and he was like completely different. He goes, you're not going to believe it. You know, my father won't let me drive the car. Well, it turns out he had a brother. I'm named after him. And when they were 17, his twin brother, he was killed in a car wreck.
Oh.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
So I think I told this on the first show. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But the point of it is this. Instead of coming to a paid therapist,
right.
If he was with his Uncle Larry, yeah. older brother, who could have said, I know why your father won't let you. Don't worry. I'll talk to him. Mm-hmm. He right. had other voices that stepped in. Mm-hmm. And now those voices are often not there to help a mom and a dad with another voice that comes in from a trusted uncle, aunt, cousin, somebody to step in and fill in the gap mm-hmm. where the kids want to go, blah, blah, blah. I can't hear anything you're saying.
Right. Yeah, I think that we're, like I said before, our whole family, my dad has five siblings and there's five of them. And they all live like basically in a 30-mile radius.
Yeah.
So they've been in my life since the beginning of my life.
Yep.
And they're not necessarily tattling on my dad, but they'll go, hey,
yeah.
this is what happened when your exactly dad was 16, right. and this is why he's this way with you, and this is why he's this way with your brother. But and it all kind of makes sense.
How healthy is it that not only does she have a mom and a dad, but she has kind of satellite moms and dads? I mean,
oh,
that's,
yeah.
I think
know?
The more voices you got
oh,
who are
gosh.
Healthy, the better. It's awesome. Like, you know, my nephew was playing golf with my brother-in-law, and I got into the cart with my nephew. And he's 12. And he says, oh, let me drive the cart. And so he drove the cart. And of course, he drives over too big a hill and almost threw me out. Well, I'm allowed as his uncle. What the hell are you doing?
Right.
You know, get the hell out of there. I mean, yeah. I could speak with much more roughness that didn't right. break the relationship than I would have if I was just somebody.
And all of a sudden, you're his favorite uncle. Probably.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
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 Exactly.
Yeah.
That's so true.
I'll
That's
never
so
be an
true.
Uncle. You know that? Unless I'm married.
I don't know. My kids call you uncle.
Oh. No, you could say,
kids have uncles.
Ding, ding, ding.
Other
I say you step in and be the uncle.
He is. He comes. He
be
comes,
the uncle.
He comes to my house once a month, picks my kids up. They go to a movie.
You're the uncle.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're the best.
Presume that posture.
All right.
I'm your uncle. And by God, I'm your uncle.
Yeah, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Will.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Always a delight. I love you, people.
How am I going to describe this episode?
I don't know.
It's going to be a tough one.
It's mm-hmm.
Chop it up and you know, intersperse it with
there's no chopping.
Music
let
or something.
Let it go.
Yeah, let it go.
Let it rip.
Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll talk to you next time. This is Bob Schneider from Burden of Proof. Please go download it now.
Good night, everybody!
I had a dream. Dream I was dying to see you. Yeah.